Well, good afternoon. We are about to begin the November 12, 2009 University Senate meeting. And to begin, we have some informational items. And the first one is on student retention. An appropriate and perhaps a related presentation was made earlier on these aspects. And on student retention, we ask our Senior Associate Provost, Dr. Aubrey, to make the presentation. Susan?
Thank you, Provost. Well, as the Provost said, I'm here to update you on retention. And the first question to ask is, why do we care? Why do we want to retain students? Some people say, well, if they can't make it, that's their problem, and we shouldn't really care. Well, there are some altruistic reasons, and then there are some other reasons. First of all, it really impacts the person's life, and it impacts their work, their career, the options that are open to them, the promotions that are open to them. And as you can see, a person who gets a baccalaureate degree earns during their lifetime almost twice as much as someone who is just graduating from high school. I've seen different numbers on this, but every single one of them show a dramatic difference between people who have baccalaureate degrees and people who do not. It also impacts our society. As you know, Michigan is trying to increase the number of graduates, college graduates, in the state. And many of our new types of careers require a baccalaureate degree. We also want an educated citizenry to be able to help us make decisions, those political decisions that impact all of us in all of our lives. But it also impacts the cost to the university. Now, this table, which is a little busy, what it does is show you if you have a 5% increase in the number of first-year students and you keep those students all the way through graduation, down in that right-hand corner, you can see that because of that, the university would bring in $3.5 million more in tuition. That's for a 5% increase in first-year students, which means 123 students. Okay. So if you're not impressed by that figure, there's something else. It takes three students who come and only stay for that first year to make up the amount of funding that we get from one student coming and graduating. So if you're worried about busting at the seams with students, then what you want to do is retain students so that you have the funding coming in from students who are actually graduating from the university and not having a revolving door that first year. So how does OU's retention compare with other Michigan universities? Well, as you can see, and this is from 2008, we're right about in the middle of the pack, and we have room to move up. Here we were at 72%. That has changed slightly. And if you look at over the last 5 or 6 years here, you can see we've gone up to 74%, but we still have room to move up. The thing to notice here, though, is that since 2005, we have been moving in a good direction, okay? 70, 73, 72, and now 74% retention. So we're moving in the right direction, but we want to do better. And some of you will remember that in 2005, we started our new Gen Ed, and we've had several first-year initiatives going on. So some of that is getting some traction, but we'd like to do better. Six-year graduation rates, this again was a year behind, and this is 43.7%. Last year we were actually at about 40%, weren't we, Laura? Yeah, 41. So again, we can do better with our graduation rates. Now, how do we do that? Well, poor retention is like cholesterol. If you all remember those Vitorin ads, remember it used to say that it comes from what you eat, but it also comes from your genetics and who you are. Well, retention is a lot like that because it comes from the talent of the students that you bring in, who they are, but it also comes from what we do with those students once we have them here. So let's take a look at the types of students that are coming in. This is the percent of new students entering universities that have a 3.0 or higher grade point average in high school. And you can see, again, Oakland is in the middle of the pack. Now, we do have an average GPA this year that went up to 3.5 for our new students. How could you have an average GPA of 3.5 when you have 72% with 3.0 or higher? How would that happen? Well, you have a lot of very good students at the top. So when you're taking the average, then you're skewing that a little bit. So that's what happened there. Okay? Okay. So again, let's look at what's been going on. And if you look at the last 6 years or so, you can see that we have been moving up in our percent that have 3.0 or higher. And we've gone from being in the 50s to the 60s and now in the 70s. But we still would like, again, to move up higher. Okay, if we look at our median composite ACT score, we can see that Oakland is in the middle of the pack at 22, and there are several other institutions in there. It irks me that Grand Valley and U of M Dearborn are at 24. I would love to see us at 24, so that's some work that we really want to do too. Now, why would it be that just changing our admission criteria? Because some people will say, well, if we just change our admission criteria, everything would be fine, we'd get better students, and everything would be great. Why would just changing our admission criteria not be the right thing to do? Well, first of all, it eliminates less qualified students. That's fine. But it doesn't attract better students. And if we do it in isolation, we aren't going to have the money we need to run the university and to acquire the resources we need for a quality education. So what do we want to do? Well, it needs to be a partnership between the faculty and the administration. And the very first thing there, a strong reputation for quality that's national, this belongs to you. It's your research, it's your publications, it's your creative endeavors, and the strength of your programs, their standing nationally, all of that is what is the foundation for OU's reputation. Okay? And so this belongs to you, and it's very important. It's an important piece of recruiting. Engaged faculty, again, this belongs to the faculty. It's your teaching, it's your engagement of students that will help to retain them. Outstanding facilities and resources, this pretty much belongs to the administration, and they've been working on this. Sue Gepp, this is why we have these capital campaigns and foundations and so forth. We're trying to get money to build new buildings, new resources, to bring things onto campus, to provide those kinds of resources for your programs. Student scholarships and grants also are something that the administration works with, and let's talk a little bit about those. Well, you know that good students want scholarships and grants rather than loans. Okay. And so what you need to do is to attract good students, you need to spend money on scholarships and grants. Now, Oakland is at 42% there, you see, of its total aid money going for scholarships and grants. That puts us in very good company because Ann Arbor, Michigan State, and Michigan Tech are ahead of us, but that's pretty good company for us. So we're trying to move in that direction and spend money on scholarships and grants rather than on loans. But that's a percentage of the total that we spend. And in the first column there, you can see the total non-need-based scholarships and grants. We're back to the middle on how much money we're actually spending there. Now, if you look down on the far right-hand column, you can see that Grand Valley is spending $50,000. We are spending $23,000 on total scholarships and grants. But you have to think about the fact, because I did a lot of work on this, and you have to think about the fact that OU is spending more of its, a higher percentage, I should say, of its scholarship and grant money comes from institutional dollars than many of the other institutions, and that includes Grand Valley. So that money that Grand Valley has there is coming from federal, state, and external grant sources, external sources. So that's where we need to begin thinking about bringing in more funds, because the institution is doing its part right now, but we need to bring in external funds. This is a slide that Mary Beth showed you, and when we attract good students, you can see that they're better retained. And the no scholarship versus the renewable scholarship, you're moving up there in the type of student that you're giving those scholarships to. So the renewable scholarships are going probably to our highest qualified students, and they are the best retained. And then the other piece is faculty engagement of students. Now, if you recall, Laura Sharpman talked about the NESE data, the national survey. But before I get there, there's one thing that I do want to show you, and that is that here are three institutions that have a median ACT of 22, which is the same as OU. Okay? And you can see first-year retention rates are quite different for those institutions. What this shows you is that even though you're bringing in students with the same profile, what you do with those students matters a great deal. So Central at 77% on this, which was from 2008, it's 5% higher than us. But if you recall, the 5% that we were talking about could bring in $3.5 million. So it's not a small thing to be 5% higher. And look at Poor Northern, they're at 57%. So what we do with students once we have them really does matter in terms of retention. Okay, here's the NESE data. The things that are in blue are statistically significant. There are a few things that are also, the effect size is medium. And one of those is the hours working off campus. So we have students working a great deal off campus. But as we go through these, and as Laura went through them before, there's a pattern here of OU being at or below the comparison group. This was a very large study. There were hundreds of institutions that were surveyed. And like Oakland, they had more than 1,000 students in each sample. So it's a huge study. So these numbers are fairly significant. And here you see student-faculty interaction. All of those were significant. Receiving prompt feedback, discussing readings, and discussing career plans also had a sizable effect, a medium-sized effect. The good or nice point that I wanted to bring out is foreign language. Our students say they're going to study or are studying foreign language at a significantly higher rate than other institutions, 39% versus 18. So that's a bright spot for OU. And you can see here in supportive campus, the one that I think is very important is overall satisfaction with education. We are below the national comparison group there. And not only is it significant, statistically, the effect size is also medium. And good and excellent advising is also medium. So those things, the difference that you see there is very important. So what do we want to take away from this? Well, what we need to take away is that we need to pay attention both to the type of students that we're getting into the university and how we can improve the quality of the students that we're recruiting, but also we need to pay attention to how we engage those students once we get they get here and what we do in our classrooms to engage them and keep them active and becoming active learners. So thank you. If you have any questions, I can take them.
Susan, thank you. We're open for questions. As you think about it, let me just give you a small observation that in numerous discussions with faculty and some different groups, we felt that Oakland is very strong in mentorship where it occurs. For example, in School of Engineering, there's a senior project with just an outstanding group of students working together. Once you have, and then in other departments and units, there are similar groups, but not in large number. Some national studies suggest if students find a mentor, either in research or library work or assisting a faculty in his or her own work, they get anchored in the institution. But when they free float looking for some identification with the institution, they don't find it, they get kind of lonely, they leave or shift. I think this is something that's very doable, and our faculty do it so well. Only we need to make a little more effort so that we engage students in our own projects. If they don't have independent project, if somebody's writing a book, you know, you give some student a library work for you to go to library, look for references, they feel engaged, even though it's your project. So I think that's one idea for us to look at among others. You know, some depend on resources. Some program in biomedical sciences, for example, are very expensive. We need to provide support for the faculty to engage students, and they are considered. But in many areas, it's not financial. It's just person-to-person contact, and students get engaged. So just for your thought, any other comments? Yes, sir. Todd?
Yeah, thank you. Does any of this apply to graduate students?
No, this was just undergrad. And we can come back and do some for grad if you'd like to see
Emily?
That.
I
don't. Mary Beth, do you have anything?
I was wondering if there are any demographics showing the amount of scholarships going to incoming freshmen as opposed to the older students.
First of all, what we've done in the past 2 years is change our whole scholarship strategy to guarantee all incoming students who receive a scholarship for 4 years. Used to be we'd give them a one-year scholarship. At the end of their freshman year, they lose it. So every scholarship we give now is a four-year guarantee. If they stay in school, keep up the whatever the requirements are, usually it's a 3.0, they maintain that scholarship throughout the duration. So we really don't have statistics that show freshmen who have scholarships do better than sophomores. Just in general, we track them over the years, and the retention and graduation rates are so much higher for students who come in the front door with a scholarship, keep it all the way through as a renewable. They tend to stay in school and graduate at significantly higher rates.
My question was asked because I'm a student here myself, and I'm seeing a lot of really positive things happening with the freshmen and these renewable scholarships that continue over 4 years. But right now, kind of in this odd place we're in, a lot of the juniors and sophomores are having trouble continuing their education because there aren't as many scholarships available to them.
That is true. And where there is scholarship money that we don't control in the admissions process is within departments. And so what we tell students is if you are looking for a scholarship in the junior year, say, because you know you feel you deserve one and you've got good academic credentials, that you should contact your department because many departments have discretionary funds that they then allocate to scholarships for juniors and seniors. we need more money in departments for that purpose. We would love to have more, and I'm sure the departments would love to have more discretionary dollars, endowed dollars, for upper-class students who have excelled in certain areas of work that they can then reward or recognize with scholarships. Most of those scholarships, all the scholarships are online, we hope. So they should be able to go to the financial aid scholarship website and scroll through all the different scholarships and see if a department has something that might match up with their particular academic profile.
Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Russell.
Is the no-loan policy for freshmen this year continuing next year? Will current freshmen keep that the rest of the way through, and will next year's class have that?
Okay. Mary Beth's going to answer again.
That was a three-part question. Let's see. Yes, on the first part, Joel, the no loan, it's really 100% tuition guarantee for need-based students will continue for the fall class of 2010. We are doing this year by year because we don't know what the budget situation is going to be. And also we're tracking the outcomes of that scholarship to make or that award to make sure it's doing what we intend it to do, which is to keep students in school. So it will continue. It's already been guaranteed for the class coming in. We're recruiting right now that'll come in 2010. What was the third part? Sure. Yeah, that's guaranteed. 4 years. It is a four. Pardon me? Oh, yeah, they have to maintain their need base. You know, they have to maintain need. If their need drops because the family is now earning a lot more, we're only going to fill in the gap between what the cost of tuition is and what the family contribution is. So it depends on the fluctuation in the family contribution and tuition.
Additional thoughts or observations? Hearing none. Susan, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mary Beth.
Dr. Snyder, I appreciate your visit. Thank you. The second informational item is final grade appeal procedure, and our registrar, Mr. Shablin, will present.
Good afternoon. I do not have a PowerPoint presentation, but I just wanted to...
But you still have power.
I still... Well, perceived power.
All right.
The current appeal of the grade language in the undergraduate and graduate catalog is the following. Students desiring to appeal a grade should first contact the instructor who issued the grade. If satisfaction is not received, they may appeal and further to the program coordinator, the department chair, and finally the dean, whose decision is final. In order to address the importance of having a grade appeal deadline to eliminate students requesting grade appeals months or even oftentimes years after the grade submitted, and then requiring the instructor to somehow reconstruct the rationale for the grade, and the importance of having a defined and published process for grade appeals in eliminating any confusion and ensuring a consistent method is followed for all grade appeals, Graduate Council and the University Committee on Undergraduate Instruction both reviewed and supported the new grade appeal process. The new process, posted as a link on today's Senate agenda item, has two important revisions. First, any student who believes grounds exist for an appeal of a final course grade must complete the appeal process within the specified time limits. For example, for fall grades, the end of the subsequent winter semester. For winter grades, the end of the subsequent fall semester, and finally, summer grades, the end of the subsequent fall semester. These time limits represent the maximum time limit for students to appeal final grades. In the event that an academic program publishes more stringent timelines, the academic program time limits will take precedence over the aforementioned time limits. The new process also identifies student and instructor and, if appropriate, chair and dean responsibility in grade appeal. The process will be printed in both the undergraduate and graduate catalogs, and students, faculty, and staff will be notified of the new process effective fall 2009 semester. I'll be pleased to answer any questions.
Please, is it Daniel or Mark?
Mark,
please.
The only question that I have in looking over this pertains to step two under student responsibility. It mentions the request for a formal grade appeal of a final course grade must be submitted to the chair of the academic department that offered the course no later than 10 days after contact with the instructor. To me, that's unclear. Is that initial contact? Is that after the instructor has made their decision? If the instructor were to, let's say, take 10 days to reconstruct all of the rationale, would that prohibit further appeal to the chair? I guess it's just unclear to me.
Steve?
I'm okay. Just reading the... Okay. It's 10 days after the initial contact with the instructor.
Okay.
Thank you. Other questions? If not, Steve, thank you.
Thank you.
We move on to item number 3 for information, which is from Graduate Council. Graduate Council approved combined degree template. Claire Rammel was to present because of her unavailability. Dr. Aubrey will make the presentation.
Thank you, Dr. Moodgill. A template for combined bachelor's and master's degree programs, or fifth year master's as some call it, was passed by both Graduate Council and UCUI. And the purpose is to provide an opportunity for high-achieving students to complete a bachelor's and master's degree in less time. It's an articulated curriculum that combines existing master's and existing baccalaureate degrees that are offered by the same or by different departments. And I should stop there and say we're beginning with existing degrees, although eventually we would like to branch out from that, but we'd like to make sure that this works beforehand, so we're piloting this way. It requires a proposal that's approved by Grad Council, UCUI, and the Provost. And the requirements are that there are specific requirements for admissions, including a GPA of 3.2. It's designed not to delay the bachelor's degree. Students receive deferred admission to graduate programs at the end of their junior year, and they need to have completed half of the credits for the undergraduate by the time they're accepted. They remain classified as undergraduates until they complete the undergraduate degree. This is important because they will be taking 12 credits of master's level coursework at undergraduate rates. So it saves the student a significant amount of tuition also. No more than 12 credits can double count, and they must be at the 500 level. All university requirements must be met for both programs. Students are eligible to hold a grad assistantship and a grant in aid after being classified as a graduate student. Thank you.
Thank you. Any suggestion, comments, clarification? If none, Susan, thank you.
Thank you.
We move on to item number 2, which is a roll call. Tamara, please.
Good afternoon. Daniel Astroff. Susan Aubrey. Pete Bertocci. Dick Abervin. Louis Shamra. Who's here?
Yeah, here.
Vivian Chen. Edith Chopin. Natalie Cole,
here.
Brian Connery,
here.
Mark Doman,
here.
Theo English, Linda Gillum,
here.
Donna Free,
here.
Frank Giblin, Annie Gilson,
here.
Jan Grates,
here.
Kevin Grimm,
here.
Jerry Grossman,
here.
Layla Gassous, Ken Hightower, Odette Israeli, Francis Jackson,
present.
Bill Keane.
Yeah.
John Kim.
Present.
Serge Kruk. Mike Latcha.
Here.
Todd Leibert.
Present.
Tom Lamarb.
Here.
Barbara Mabee.
Here.
Charles Marks.
Here.
Mark Meadow.
Here.
Jay Meehan.
Here.
Fatma Millie. Karen Miller. Ken Mitten. Annette Osborne.
Here.
Barb Penpraise.
Here.
Michelle Piskulich.
Here.
Mike Polis. Cheryl Riley Doucette.
Here.
Joel Russell.
Here.
Linda Schweitzer.
Here.
Laura Shartman.
Here.
Michelle Southward.
Here.
Anna Spagnolo.
Here.
Ron Sudol. Ann Switzer.
Here.
Diane Norris. For Linda Thompson.
Here.
Emily Tiso.
Here.
Ron Tracy.
Here.
Julie Volk.
Here.
Julie Walters.
Here.
Karen Wells.
Here.
Lynn Williams.
Here.
And Susan Wood is not here, I believe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senators, I'm very pleased to recognize our student representatives. Sometimes in our activities, we have not neglected but failed to recognize. And I'm very pleased to ask Daniel Estrop, Mark Medoff, and Emily Tissot to stand up and be recognized, our student representative to Senate. Thank you. Thank you. And I'm very pleased they're already participating, so we appreciate that. And one more note of appreciation is some of you did participate yesterday in welcoming to our campus a new dean, Dean Louis Shamra, Dean of School of Engineering and Computer Science. Louis, we welcome you as well to the Senate. Thank you. We go to item number C, which is approval of the minutes of October 15, 2009 meeting. Anyone endorses the approval of minutes? Dr. Latcha, and second?
Second.
Julie, second. Discussion, amendments? Noting none, please indicate your approval for approval of the minutes by saying aye.
Aye.
Any against? Abstentions? So approved. We have old business. Which is none. Kresge Library will come back later. And new business in item E is a motion from the steering committee to recommend approval of a new major program in actuarial science. And Dr. Miller was to move that in her absence. Maybe, Kevin, would you kindly?
Moved that the Senate recommend to the President and Board of Trustees approval of a Bachelor of Science major in Actuarial Science.
Thank you. This is the first reading, I suppose, and it is open to suggestions, question, debate, but we will not vote on this at this meeting. I'm sorry?
You need a second.
Second? Okay.
Thank you,
Ron. Would you like... Ron, if you could help the Senate as to what this program is all about, perhaps an executive summary. Thank you.
The actuarial science major historically at most universities is offered by a math department. The entire actuarial science discipline, though, is becoming increasingly important for them to understand business and economics. As a result, a couple years ago, myself and Daryl Schmidt and Theo Oganami got together and outlined a proposal for an actuarial science major joint between economics and the mathematical sciences department. This was developed in conjunction with both schools and with both deans' approvals, although we've had many deans since then in the School of Business. And as a result, finally got through all school-wide committees and college committees and has made it through the university process. The program's somewhat unique in that students take a very demanding set of courses in both the math department and the Department of Economics, with a couple other courses in the School of Business. The majors from this will be encouraged in their junior year, after their junior year, to take the first set of exams offered by the Society of Actuaries, and after they graduate or during the summer of their after their fourth year, they'll be encouraged to take the second exam. With those two exams, they would be unbelievably well prepared for the job market. Students who pass the two exams and have a degree like this have little trouble getting a job, and a very high-paying job in the 60,000 area. So with a bachelor's degree, it's really a very, very good. When students have been asked if they're interested in it because they know it is so highly paid, they've shown an awful lot of interest. Unfortunately, when they're also told what they have to do and the courses they have to take, their interest dissipates a bit. These students, if they want to, after getting this degree, certainly at least within economics, could go on to get a master's or even a PhD. They could go on to get an MBA. Within math, medical sciences, I'm sure they could get a master's degree. I can't speak if they're well enough prepared to get a doctoral degree. But it's a very, very demanding program, offers very little room for students to take electives because of having to take such a variety of courses in both disciplines. And as a result, we don't expect a lot of students. We're typically thinking 3 to 5 a year. And as a result, there's certainly room in the School of Business courses and the Mathematical Science Department's courses for these students. If by some miracle things change, we'll have to reevaluate and see what happens. But we just, given what's happened at other universities, don't anticipate a larger group than this. It is really for the high-achieving student. There's no question about it. So we're very excited about this, and we'd be happy to answer any questions of the senators. I do think it needs one more committee approval, and that's the new budget committee that is just now been reevaluated. Hopefully by the time of second reading we'll have that information. Since a little bit of funds are being requested, I'm hoping there's not a whole lot of issues there. I'm happy to answer any questions, and there's two members of the mathematics department.
Thank you. Dr. Bertocci, for a minute. Thank you, Ron.
You're welcome.
Just additional information, if you don't have a written information in front of you. This proposal is available by link, and assessments committee memo is already available for you, and your QI memo is also available. All the committees but budget have approved this. Planning committee has verbally approved it, but they'll be writing as well. So that's the information. It has gone through the governance system, and one committee is still pending in its approval. Which will come with time. Yes, Dr. Bertocci, question.
I must confess I haven't had a chance to read the actual proposal, but I have two general questions. First of all, would this be unique among the state university system, or is Oakland going to be one of a number of universities that will be offering this? Would be my first question. Second would be, to what extent does this would seem to me, totally naively, that there would be a requirement of a number of very specialized courses, and I'd be curious as to where the faculty is going to be could be coming from to teach that, if that is indeed the case. Those are my two questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
The first question is, we are not the only school to be offering an actuarial science. University of Michigan has offered one for years. It is strictly in the Department of Mathematics. Central Michigan and Eastern Michigan also. Theirs is in the mathematics department, but they have students taking courses in economics and in the School of Business. Michigan State does not have a bachelor's degree program. They have it as a concentration within the math department. So there aren't a lot of programs available. And we have worked very closely with Watson Wyatt, who is one of the large employers of actuarials in this area. They're a consulting firm. And they very much thought our program was very competitive and gave the information that students needed. It turns out that most of the courses necessary are not unique to actuarial science. They are strong in understanding statistical distributions, statistical analysis, financial analysis. Those type of courses are general. The one course that is unique is risk management. Three of us are willing to teach the course. Professor Oganami has passed four of the actuarial exams himself. I have contemplated a couple times taking them and have avoided it, but nonetheless have had the experience and practice of doing the things, and I'm happy to teach it. And Professor Schmidt has expressed an interest and willingness to do it. Because of the nature of this, we only anticipate it being offered as of now in the summer, rather than having to take away from regular classes. And it may have to originally be taught as an independent study. We'll have to wait and see. It will be cross-listed for MBA students. My concern is whether they'll truly have the necessary math background for it. There are the School of Business and Mathematical Science Department enforces prerequisites, and they will be enforced. I think that answered both questions.
Thank you. Any other questions, clarification needs, or observations? If not, this was the first reading, so we'll pick up at the next meeting and have a vote. And meanwhile, we'll get the committee report from the one that is pending. Item number two is a motion from the University Committee on Undergraduate Instruction to approve a policy on transfer of credits from non-regionally accredited institution. And Senator Osborne, my colleague, will make the motion.
Move that the Senate approve the following policy on transfer of credit from a non-regionally accredited institution. If a prospective student from a non-regionally accredited institution meets OU admission requirements, they will be admitted to Oakland University. The student's credits from prior non-regionally accredited colleges and universities will be accepted according to the following policy. Oakland University may accept for transfer those credits for which a grade of 2.0 on a 4-point scale or higher was earned from institutions with candidacy status from a regional accrediting agency or from other accredited institutions, provided that, one, the institution grants a baccalaureate or associate degree, two, the institution is a recognized member of CHEA, three, the courses represented for transfer are shown to have equivalency or are determined to be of traditional academic nature and are acceptable to an Oakland University department, and four, the institution's courses are taught by faculty with a master's degree or above.
Thank you. I'd like to have somebody make the motion.
Second it.
Second already? All right. We're ready for discussion. With us is Dr. Aubrey to make any additional comments or answer any questions.
Thank you. You're going to be sick of me. Well, the federal government told regional accrediting agencies that it's not sufficient for institutions to simply say that they will only take transfer credit from an institution because it's regionally accredited. The institutions need to have criteria and indicate how they will handle non-regionally accredited institutions. The Higher Education Authorization Act asks that these criteria for transfer be made public. So UCUI has created the policy that you see before you and with the criteria that were described. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Dr. Russell, then Dika Bourbon.
Hi.
number four, the institution's courses are taught by faculty master's degree or above. Does that mean the course being transferred is taught by a faculty?
Institution. The institution uses faculty with master's degrees or above.
Only faculty with master's degrees or above.
Yeah.
And how can we enforce that?
We can look at the institution to see whether or not that's true, and if it's not true, then we would not take transfer credit from that institution.
Is that true at Oakland University?
Mary Beth isn't here, but perhaps, Susan, you can answer
Well,
that.
According to our accreditors, that's our standard. Now, you do have some non-credit kinds of things being taught by people who don't have master's degrees.
But there's no credit course at Oakland taught by someone without a master's degree. Or
not to my knowledge. Is Steve here, Steve? I don't think we have any, no.
Yeah, I think in very, very specific cases where, you know, if you're learning how to sing popular music from Frank Sinatra, you're not going to worry about what degree he has. Similarly, in some specific areas, there are expertise in the metropolitan Detroit area where we can tap to educate our student, be it in music or jazz, things that are not normally associated with the degree attainment, but are experts in the field. But that's not a general rule. That's very exceptional. I'm sorry? I think they're doctoral students in math, perhaps. Yeah. But they're teaching assistant. I don't think they're record.
They're not instructor of record.
Right. Yeah, they're assistants. Pardon me?
Well,
Susan, if you address that question.
Yeah. You know, I have no problem with putting in here primarily or a word such as that. Joel, if you would prefer something like that. I think Yukui would be amenable to that. I don't see why not. The issue, okay, this was not in our original motion. It was taken to the steering committee, and this was put in after talking with the steering committee because one of their members indicated that some of the CHIA institutions have primarily baccalaureate people teaching, and they did not want that. And I believe that I agree with them. I would not want to take transfer credit from an institution that had baccalaureate-level people teaching. So this was to protect our institution from that situation.
I think when that discussion that I heard on the steering committee was that we are going to accept credits from credible institutions,
right,
in which instruction is delivered by people with master degree or higher. Now, at Oakland, majority that is the case. I think there may be some exception as they've spoken, and maybe in some cases you may indicate an instructor who may be either applying for master, is a master student, but be asked to do certain thing because of their exceptional ability. But normally, that would be not the case. That's my understanding.
Right, and if it were the case, then we would be out of compliance with the NCAA.
Right.
Because that's required. Kevin?
Pardon my ignorance. Could you expand CHIA for me? I do not know
yes.
what CHIA
yeah.
is.
Yeah, I meant to do that. I'm sorry. CHIA is an association that has 3,000 institutional members, including Oakland University. It has 60 accrediting agencies that are also members. And it has standards of recognition for institutions, both that are regionally accredited and non-regionally accredited. So it's the national group, if you will, that looks at all types of accreditations. And not all institutions are accredited by CHIA. There are many, many that are not. In fact, the Michigan Civil Service Office has a listing of over 1,000 institutions that are not CHIA accredited that they will not accept for employment purposes. They won't accept degrees from those institutions. So it kind of does that.
I have a follow-up, if I may.
Yeah.
Candidacy status, does that mean that an institution is being considered for accreditation by
That's
a region?
That's correct.
Okay.
And we have actually, Steve, I think, made exceptions to take credits from candidacy status regionally accredited institution.
But there are institutions in CHIA who are not either regionally accredited or pending being accredited.
That is correct.
Okay.
That's correct. But they are accredited by other types of national accreditors. Dika?
Do you have any names of this kind, these kinds of institutions?
Yes, I have a whole listing. If you would
be,
like
I'd just be curious
it.
To know what kinds of institutions these are.
Please don't make copies for the Senate. There's a long list.
Would you like to hear them all? No. Abilene Christian University, Adelphi University, Adrian Cotwell. Some of these on here are going to be regionally accredited, and Adrian is, because regionally accredited are here also. So I would, you know, it's hard to go through and pick them out. The Air Force Institute of Technology, Akron Institute of Herzing College, Alabama Agricultural and Mechanical University, Alaska Christian College, Albany State University is obviously regional, Alfred University, Alice Lloyd College, Allegheny College. You kind of get the, yeah.
Thank you. This was the first reading, so we'll have opportunity to discuss. Yes, Jerry?
Jerry?
I just wanted to know what may means. It says Oakland University may accept. So is there some administrator or faculty or somebody that
yes.
will look at these and possibly say no, even if they meet all
yes.
these criteria?
Well, actually, that was put in there because of number three, which says that departments are able to say that they do not accept this credit if they feel that it is not up to their standards. But the may may be in the wrong place. I'm looking for it. Where is it here?
It's the third word of the indented part.
No, I don't have that.
I mean, it seems to be somehow saying that there's, even if the courses jump through all the hoops, that they can still be turned down.
Well, it's something we kind of put into everything just because there are exceptions, but we can put will accept if you want to put that in.
I'm not saying that's better. I'm just wondering.
I think it gives the faculty the leverage they
it
have.
It does, and it gives the university right. the leverage that yeah. if someone comes along and they do have all these, but we really feel that the standards of the institution aren't something that we would really like to accept, then we probably still could deny it.
Jay? Dr. Jay Meehan.
Hi, Susan.
Hi.
You'd mentioned the federal government mandated this.
Yes, Department of Education.
They did. And that particular act was?
The Higher Education Reauthorization Act.
Very good. And our legal department has reviewed this?
Not to my knowledge, but it's something that all universities are held to, but we could have them look
so
at
our
it.
Legal department hasn't actually reviewed that to kind of look at which sections apply?
They all apply.
They all apply. And the consequences for non-appliance?
Steve?
Non-compliance.
You may recall also, too, at the department chair meeting.
Right.
Steve? Kindly use the mic. Because you're being recorded appropriately. Yeah.
I think, Jay, you may recall at the department chair's meeting, the textbook affordability is also
right.
part of that
Same
Higher
Act.
Education Reauthorization
yeah.
Act. So.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Okay. So the sections here, so that act has like broad-ranging implications for a lot of matters. Are there others that we're working on aside from the textbook and this and other things?
Not to my knowledge. I can tell you some of the politics behind why this is in there.
That
you want to know
helpful.
That?
That's
okay.
What, I'd like.
What happened is that the federal government gives financial aid to students in these colleges that are non-regionally accredited, and they would like to then have those students be able to progress on to another university if they want to. And it's all about financial aid, really.
About financial aid, and do we mm-hmm. have a concern about quality? Is that part of what where we're going here with this?
That yes, and that was why we have these four criteria, because the university is allowed to have criteria that it
Correct.
Sets in who.
So
I shouldn't say who, because This is not about students. The students can come here one way or the other if they meet our admissions criteria, but it's whether or not we accept the credits they've taken at another institution.
Right, so then we still have we have our discretion here, and that's what we're trying
to build. That's correct, and we try to build that in.
Thank you. Susan, thank you. Yes, Ron?
I think I would like to make an amendment. And I would like to amend number 4, given the comments that were made. Right now, it says the institution's courses are taught. And it was even bothering the steering committee about how it was going to be implemented and how we were going to enforce it. Perhaps a better approach in my motion would be that the institution's policy is that courses are taught by faculty with a master's degree or above. And then the May that's up at top is appropriate because if we believe, even though it's their policy, we find sufficient reason to question that policy, we can then go and deny the transfer credit. As you said, Oakland's policy is that it be that way, and it's NCA has said that is our policy.
Right.
So that would be my amendment.
Okay.
If it is seconded or not.
Well, first, any proponent of this proposal? Second, we need?
Francis.
Dr.
Where is our policy printed?
The policy for the institution?
Mm-hmm.
The policy that I was talking about was an NCA policy.
I guess my question is, I've never seen a policy that Oakland University has that says our courses are taught by people who have, and it's possible that other institutions don't have it either. So if someone asked to see our policy in order to accept our courses, where would we send them?
Jenny?
Well, I was thinking she meant here was the transfer policy, which is in the undergraduate catalog.
What?
Jenny? Jenny, would you kindly repeat for us? We'd love to hear you again.
I was going to say that the undergraduate transfer policy is in the undergraduate catalog, but the policy that explicitly states that our teachers, our instructors, our masters prepared or higher, I do not know where other than in our, we advertise that, of course, all the time.
Right, and I think what
public record says it.
Dr.
Jackson,
sorry. What Dr. Jackson is saying is that we don't have a specific policy because there's no need for a policy because our accreditor says that and we would be out of compliance if we don't do that. And so she's saying, according to what Ron is saying, how would another institution possibly have a policy to show us that? Is that right, Francis?
That is correct.
Yeah. I do not believe the national accrediting bodies generally have that requirement, which is why we typically haven't accepted them in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Because in nationally accredited institutions, there are cases where a person who is bachelor's prepared is teaching a course in a bachelor's degree program.
That's correct.
So what we're trying to do is articulate that is a quality that is not acceptable to us for transfer at Oakland, regardless of the status of the institution with CHIA, or even with regionally accrediting. We have an issue right now with U of M Dearborn offering an Aramaic course that our modern language faculty feels is not appropriate for transfer credit to the university. So hopefully that will become policy, that we're not taking those particular courses, even though we do generally take U of M Dearborn credit.
Yeah, I understand. I guess I just was speaking to Dr. Tracy's motion and saying that if someone required that of us, we don't have it printed anywhere. And
then I think we would find that in the North Central documentation.
Based on Dr. Moodgill's earlier comments, it would appear that we don't always follow it. So the fact that we may, in fact, be in violation of our accrediting body, if someone, it wouldn't be Frank Sinatra for me.
Whitney Houston?
Well, okay. But if we under certain circumstances also have people teaching who don't have a minimum of a master's degree, then our accrediting body's requirements doesn't seem to hold sway under certain circumstances. I understand what Dr. Tracy is saying. It seems to me that maybe if one way to answer this question is to request the course syllabus to see what the credentials are. And if you can look them up in the catalog, like you can look Francis Jackson up in the catalog, and there are my credentials.
Well, the difficulty with that, and I think Steve can tell you, is that then you would have to go course by course, Francis, and when you're transferring in, usually it's from an institution, and you have policies that say, yes, we take courses from that particular institution.
See, we don't do that in nursing. We go course by course.
Yeah. Kevin?
Susan, I'll just note that item three, however, and as you explained it earlier, point three suggests that it may be possible that departments may be reviewing materials
they
on
can.
Individual courses.
They can.
That would seem to me to set up the pattern for making number four, as Francis just suggested, applicable on a course-by-course basis. I mean, I understand what you just said about making more work, but that seems to be what the document says, that the principle is that the courses submitted for credit should have been taught by instructors with master's degree or above.
Can I just say that sometimes the equivalencies that come in are actually not full syllabi because students don't have them. And so having something else that creates a standard is actually very helpful. We get, in the College of Arts and Sciences, hundreds, as you might imagine, of courses to evaluate across the different departments. And having some general rules of thumb where we can weed down that number, mm-hmm. I think, is something we should all want.
Right.
And the inability is students don't really like it when you tell them they have to come up with the syllabus necessarily, getting a hold of the faculty member. It really creates problems for them.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Dr. Yoroso.
I thought the basis of this was to look at the general quality of courses at the institution, the general standards, not individual courses. Years ago, one time, I had a wife that was a chair of a community college in Port Huron, and she could find no one to teach a technical math course. Mm-hmm. Any chemist could teach a technical math course for community college students, so I taught it, okay? So if that appeared in your transcript, it would look like a PhD. It wouldn't have shown I wasn't in math. They would have assumed it was math, right? And at the level I taught that course, I would never have taught a course at Oakland at that level. Mm-hmm. So the degree's got nothing to do with the level you're teaching the course.
But, Joel, that's true anywhere. I mean, that's true at St. Clair Community College. It's probably true other places, too. But
the basis of everything is to look at the general.
It is, absolutely. Yeah, it is. Well, there were two things. It was for us to look at the general level of courses coming from an institution and say, yes, that's one of the institutions where we will accept transfer credit. But it was also then, once we do that, to say a department is not necessarily held to accepting that particular student's credit. So if a student comes in and wants to go into business and all of their accounting and their math and everything else looks fine, then that would be fine. But that same student might come in and want to go into biology, and perhaps they've gone to a Christian college where their particular coursework is not what biology would accept. So we want the departments then after that, it's a kind of a two-stage thing, if you will, so that departments still have the ability to say no, and the student could go to another department on this campus where their coursework might be acceptable.
I think it just gives flexibility to our department and faculty to make that decision.
That's right.
And I think that leverage is helpful.
Yes.
Do we withdraw the motion of amendment, or we? Jerry, what's your direction to us? There was an amendment on the table. Do we withdraw that, or we continue with that?
Well, there was a proposed amendment. I thought it was seconded.
There was no second.
It was just expressed. Any proponents second for Dr. Ron Tracy's amendment that we put the word policy associated with number four, and which was discussed by others that we do not have a written policy. So indicating a policy will mean now we have to get some people to work to make a policy, which would have to come to Senate for approval.
If the amendment didn't get a second, then it's dead.
Okay. Well, Dr. Tracy, we have sympathies, but we can move on. If you
Life goes on. That's
all right,
okay.
Thank you. Well, this was the first reading. Obviously, there will be additional thoughts on this issue, and Susan, we thank you for
thank
clarification.
You.
The third item, new item, is a motion from Steering Committee to endorse a resolution regarding placing the names of Oakland University's academic units on campus building, and Dr. Jackson will make the motion.
It is moved that the University Senate endorse a resolution to be sent to the Board of Trustees requesting that the names of the College of Arts and Sciences and each professional school will be placed on the building that houses their main administrative offices. College of Arts and Sciences on Varner Hall, School of Education and Human Services on Pauley Hall, School of Engineering and Computer Science on Dodge Hall, School of Nursing on O'Dowd Hall, School of Business Administration on Elliott Hall, School of Health Sciences on Hannah Hall. I move the adoption of this resolution.
Thank you. Any second? Dr. Ron, Jamie Han, second. Discussion thoughts? Yes, please.
About the Eye Institute, where do they fit in?
Well, we can certainly add that to it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I mean, this resolution basically does not eliminate any unit. These are examples that are very obvious.
Right. Okay.
And
yeah.
Since Eye Research Institute is a research organization, not in the tradition of academic instructional offering, but it certainly is a unit, and I think there's no reason why it could not be included eventually with this list.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, that's
right. Well, this Senate can always use humor.
In fact, I wonder if the resolution should include a stipulation about font size. So, I think maybe we should measure the existing letters on O'Dowd.
I've been tempted to do that.
I thought perhaps you might have.
Just to make sure nursing's name is as big as the School of Medicine.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I can't resist saying this. So size does matter.
Sorry. Font size.
And also, not to be discriminatory, the average age of the senator is getting there. So I think a bigger font will help. Well, move on. I think this is a good suggestion that has been placed and seconded. If you have additional thoughts, we welcome the addition of Eye Research Institute idea. And if we go with this, that will be done. I don't think there's an issue there. But any other thoughts, we welcome. If not, this is the first reading, and we will vote on this the next time. There's a procedural motion, number item 4, to staff Senate standing committees, and who is moving tomorrow?
Anyone can move.
Anyone? Maybe Kevin, you're closer.
All right.
Thank you.
It is moved that the persons listed below be appointed to the committees designated for Senate Planning Review Committee, Francis Jackson School of Nursing through 2011, Shravan Chintala Eye Research Institute through 2010, Alberto Rojo College of Arts and Sciences through 2012, George Stauffen, College of Arts and Sciences, through 2011. Gautam Singh, School of Engineering and Computer Sciences, through 2010. For the Senate Budget Review Committee, Gwendolyn McMillan, School of Education and Human Services, 2009 through 2010. Gary Moore, School of Nursing, 2009 through 2010. Sandy Pelfrey, School of Business Administration, 2009-2011. Shay Howell, College of Arts and Sciences, 2009 through 2011. Mike Latchka, School of Engineering and Computer Science, 2009 through 2012. Kevin Murphy, School of Business Administration, 2009 through 2012.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Second.
Thank you. And this is a procedural motion. That means after our following discussion, if you so please, we can vote on this at this meeting. Any thoughts, comments? If none, we are ready to vote. Please. Tomorrow?
Francis Jackson is chair.
designated as chair of planning. It was on, I don't know why it didn't make it on the agenda, on the posted agenda. It was indicated in my typed agenda that I sent over to be posted. So I'm sorry about that. And there is no chair determined for Senate budget.
And we'll discuss it at the steering committee
yes.
at the next meeting.
Mm-hmm. This was formulated yeah. just in the last couple of days.
This is a procedural motion, so we can vote on this, what is presented to you, and the Senate steering committee will decide on any unfinished business. If you have no additional comments, we suggest we vote. Please indicate your approval on the composition of the two committees by saying aye.
Aye.
Any oppose? So approved. Thank you. We have item good and welfare. Anyone who wants to make a comment, thoughts, share information is welcome to do that this time. If not, I see some people trying to move. Are we ready for adjournment?
So moved.
Yep. Okay, second. We are adjourned, and George, thank you for your work to help us every Senate meeting. George, thank you.